My name is Eve Allen. I'm interviewing Joe Cobb on the 21st of February at 2:06 p.m. in room 60 on the ground floor of Fentel Library for the Southwest Virginia LGBTQ plus History Project. All right, so welcome. Just kind of to start off, do you want to give us an idea of kind of your early life? You know, what was it like growing up?
Well, I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, which is kind of right in the heart of the United States. I was one of four children. My parents were not able to have biological children, so they adopted each of us. And so all four of us came from different birth families. My parents were great. They created a household full of love where all of us knew we were loved, knew we were chosen, that we were very special to them. They made a point of telling us from as early as we could understand that we were adopted, not to say that in a negative way, but just to say we're special, we chose you. All of our baby books reflected that. So I love that from the beginning, our adoptions were not something that were secret or closeted or hidden. We knew from the beginning. And as we grew, they would continue to tell us that story and were always very open with us, so that if we ever reached a point in our young adult or adult lives that we wanted to seek out our birth families or learn more about our history, we could do that. My parents encouraged me and my siblings to find things that were of interest to us. They didn't want us to conform to how they thought we should grow up, but to give us the space to discover what we were good at. What we loved, what inspired us. And so for me, from an early age, I loved to sing. So singing was really important to me. We lived out in the country, so when the weather was great, we were always outside during the day and evening, after school especially. Got along particularly well, considering there were six of us in the house. But I was a good student. I loved school. I loved history. Loved music, as I said. Loved reading and loved to write. And kind of carried those things through my adolescence and into high school, where I really continued to explore my singing.
So for you, what year were you born, first of all?
I was born in 1962.
1962. Okay. So high school would start about when for you?
High school started for me in 1976. Okay. So we had elementary, junior high, and high school. And our junior high was 3 years, and then high school was three years.
So in high school, a lot of us start to figure out, you know, who we are and where we're going. For you, what was that process like?
Well, that process actually started out for me much earlier. I think it happens when our bodies change during adolescence and puberty. But there was a particular memory that I had when I was about 10 years old. And I remember going with my family to Dallas, Texas, to see my uncle, my dad's brother, in a play. He was in a play. I don't remember the name of it, but his co-star was Judy Carne, who was very famous on the show Laugh-In, which was well before your time. But it was a great comedy show. And my Uncle Ray had a roommate who was also cast in the play. And when our family went to go and visit my uncle and his roommate, I just remembered thinking, what a beautiful man his roommate was. And what was most striking to me about him were his beautiful feet. Don't know why, I just thought those are the most beautiful feet I've ever seen in my life. 10 years old. And I wanted to be close to him. I wanted to sit close to him, but my two sisters got in before me, and I have this wonderful picture that my grandma took from the trip, and it shows one sister on one knee, another sister on another knee, and I'm right up next, as close as I could get. That was my earliest awareness of recognizing beauty in a human being. And I guess what didn't at the time strike me as anything other than normal was that it was a man. And the particular feature, his feet, were just significant to me in recognizing that I could see beauty not only in another human being, but also in a man. So that's probably my earliest awareness of natural beauty, sexual understanding, that sort of thing.
So going through with your family and going through those years, were you able to explore that more openly within your family? Did you have to hide more? What was that growing up for you?
I didn't have the capacity to explore it openly. Okay. I did it very secretly, kind of in the treasure house of my own heart. After that experience and that memory, I recall in junior high, I was awkward in athletics. I didn't like PE or gym. I wasn't naturally athletic, so I always struggled to feel at home in those kinds of classes. And particularly in the locker room, when, you're completely vulnerable. And so I didn't feel particularly striking. But I began to notice how all the boys were just developing at different stages and levels. And some who were my age that appeared to be grown men. And I had no hair on my body. So that kind of experience of trying to figure that out and make sense of it. I remember one night when I was concerned that I didn't have any hair, and then suddenly, like a Who in Whoville and Dr. Seuss, one hair popped up. And I remember asking my dad to come in and explain to me what this meant. What's happening to me? And he was great. He's always very patient and kind. And we talked about it. And it was reassuring to me that this was my way of developing physically. And it was different from other guys.
So kind of moving from that to life as an adult. So where did you wind up going into your life? I know you're in politics now, but it looks like you've done a lot.
Well, just to add a little bit to the that developmental experience. Yes. From that experience in junior high, I really began to wrestle with my sexual orientation. I knew I was different, that I felt different, that I felt unique. But I didn't have anybody to really talk with about that. So I think because I internalized it and didn't feel like there was a healthy climate for me to talk to anyone about for the risk of that, that internalizing, I think, began to develop a little bit of a feeling of shame within me because I had to hide it. But once I got into, and in high school, I didn't express attraction toward boys or young men. When I went to prom, I went out, I asked a girl out. But I didn't really date anyone seriously. The first time I dated a girl seriously was probably in college, and she was more of a friend. And I discovered that, that it just felt awkward trying to navigate that. While I was also sexually active, starting in high school with guys. So that tension became very real in me, but it remained hidden. When I was in my first year of college, I was trying to discern what vocational path my life would take, and was working part-time in a church as their youth minister. And I'd grown up in the church. I was very comfortable in the church.
Which denomination?
United Methodist.
United Methodist. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And always felt surrounded by love. I did not grow up in a fundamentalist or evangelical religious climate. It was very much a love-centered climate, the whole teaching of unconditional love. But again, we rarely had conversations about human sexuality or the gift of sexuality within the religious context, so I didn't have the framework in which to talk about that. So in college, working at this church, I experienced a call into ministry. And that call for me came during a church meeting when I was seated in the back of the sanctuary of this small, white frame, old, rural church called Grandview United Methodist Church in near Winfield, Kansas, just outside of where I was going to school at Southwestern College. And in the moment, I was present but absent. It was almost like I was outside of my body. I was so in my body that I felt outside. And I had this powerful sensation in my heart of clarity. And along with that clarity, a voice that said, "I want you to be a pastor." And I was so compelled by that that I went back to my college, talked to my advisor, who recommended that I change advisors just so that I could focus more on the path of philosophy and religion. And kind of made a beeline for finishing college so I could go to seminary. And I finished college in 3 years.
Nice.
I did independent studies. I took classes during the summer. All of that designed to get me on a trajectory to go to seminary and to become an ordained clergy.
So that would be, so you would have graduated about when?
I graduated from college in 1983.
Okay. So you felt this really big call, and you're going into seminary. So what was the process of choosing a seminary to go to? What was that like for you?
I looked at a couple different seminaries. I mainly wanted to go where I could get the best seminary education. Because I had never been very far from home, it was a big step for me. I was the kind of kid that loved being at home. I loved hanging out with my parents. The first day that my parents took me to school and moved me into the dorm, I just kept delaying, because I didn't want them to leave. And finally, my mom, who was about 5'4", got out of the back seat, opened my door. I was in the passenger seat next to my dad, and she said, "Joe, it's time to go." That was her power move, and she and I went. So for me to have that kind of propelled motion to finish college early and go to seminary was really extraordinary. It reminded me that I had this kind of resilience and ability to risk within me. So I looked at several seminaries, and the one I chose and was accepted to was Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas, which was about 6 hours from where I lived. And I remember part of the reason I chose it is because I had relatives who lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I knew that I would have some family support close by if I needed to draw on that. And I loaded up my 1970 pea green Toyota Corolla with all of my stuff and drove straight through to Dallas and began my seminary education. Perkins is part of Southern Methodist University.
Yes.
So I began that in the fall of 1983.
So in this calling and doing all of this, how did you match your faith to your sexuality? How did you...
Great question. I totally hit it. Years later, I shared... I had three roommates. We had kind of a quad section of one of the dorms. And one of my roommates was really good at asking me very directed questions. And one day he asked me very pointedly, "So are you going to seminary to run away from your sexuality?" And I apparently said yes. I did not remember this, but he had a very clear memory of that, and it makes sense to me. I was looking for a way to not have to wrestle with the thing that I really needed to wrestle with. And so I so focused on my studies and becoming ordained that I set that aside. I compartmentalized it. I just put it over here. Didn't get rid of it, but put it over here, knowing that it was still very much an integral part of me. So in my first year of, actually my second year of seminary, we lived in a co-ed dorm, and I had a roommate who was gay. He didn't officially come out to me, but I pretty much knew he was. And we didn't talk much about that. But this young woman moved in right next door to us. She was from Shawsville, Virginia, and she had the most distinctive Southern accent that I'd ever heard. I was moving back into the dorm for my beginning of my second year, and down the hall I could hear, "Well, hello, my name's Leanne Taylor. I don't believe I know you." And every person down the hall she was introducing herself to. So extroverted. And I was an introvert. So there was something really fascinating about her. So we just kind of hit it off. We loved some of the same things. She was such a force of light and encouragement and positive spirit that we just hit it off. We started walking to Seminary Singers, the choir that we sang in together. And there was something about her and something about me, and we fell in love. And it was a very short, relatively speaking, courtship. We met in September. We were engaged on Valentine's Day of 1985 and married in August of 1985.
Wow.
So it was kind of a fast thing, but she was getting a master's in choral conducting and sacred music, and I was getting a master's in divinity. And so our trajectory just seemed kind of ideal. Lots of support, encouragement, and we very compatible in so many ways. One of the things, though, that was interesting about our early courtship was that as she was very open with me about previous relationships, previous sexual experiences, I was more hesitant. I just stopped at a point and didn't talk about what I was wrestling with. So, again, I kept that compartmentalized and didn't talk about it until later, and we'll get to that part of the story.
So you've gotten through kind of this whole part of your life while putting part of yourself in a kind of a box. Mm-hmm. What did that do to you? How do you box in part of yourself, and it, how does that affect you?
When you don't tend something that's such an essential part of who you are, it keeps showing up. It's like it keeps knocking on your heart to say, I'm over here. Don't forget me. I've got things I need to tell you. I've got some work you need to do. And so not tending to that began to show up for me in ways that really, I think the best way I can describe it is when I would think about it, I would begin to feel a little depressed or down. And so I tended to just acknowledge when I felt that way and then try and immerse myself in something that would help me feel better.
So what things did you immerse yourself in?
Well, doing my work. It was probably the beginning of me having some workaholic tendencies. I just threw myself into my work. Or if we were doing something together as a couple, we would just do that. And so it was kind of a combination of those things. Fortunately, during seminary, we were both very busy, not only studying, but working in different churches. And in our free time, we were just enjoying each other's company. We were making new friendships. Toward the end of my seminary career, we had the opportunity to travel to England, where I served as pastor of 4 Methodist churches in Plymouth, England, in Devon, South England. And that was such an incredible experience to be able to live abroad and to be a part of a different culture. It was the year of the 250th anniversary of the conversion of John and Charles Wesley, who founded the Methodist movement. So being a part of that was pretty extraordinary. And then coming back from that in 88, 89 to finish seminary, the momentum then was to go from that seminary experience into serving a local church, being appointed in the United Methodist system, and going back to Kansas, where I grew up. So for me, it was like going home. For Leanne, it was like continuing to be far away from her home because she grew up, you know, right here in Shawsville, Virginia.
Yeah.
So when we moved back to Kansas, I had 2 churches, so I had plenty to do to keep me busy. We were wanting to start a family, and so when we moved to the small community of Lyons, Kansas, in central Kansas, Leanne was pregnant. But a few months after we arrived there and went to the doctor to see how things were progressing, we learned that the fetus had died. And it was what was called a molar pregnancy, which, if gone unchecked, could have become cancerous. So she had a miscarriage, and the early stages of our being there were kind of a mixture of delight in starting something new in our life together and grieving the loss of this potential new life.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a second to